Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 1-800-NOW-OPEN or open.com.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in our 2006 election series, 30 Issues in 30 Days. Next hour, Issue 18, Should We Get Out of Iraq? That's the debate featuring Jack Murtha, George McGovern, and others that I moderated earlier this month. We will play extended excerpts. Tomorrow, Will Your Vote Be Counted? Friday, Issue 20, Whose Moral Values? With a spokesman for the religious right and Congressman Barney Frank. So 30 issues in 30 days and a lot more to listen for every weekday at 10 a.m. Well, the Mets are still in there for at least one more game, but no Subway Series this year. At very least, that means no chance for old-timers to reminisce about those good old days before my time when there seemed to be a Subway Series every year. Not the Mets versus the Yankees, of course, but the Dodgers versus the Yankees and once in a while the Giants. Yes, children, once the Brooklyn Dodgers were a local team before Walter O'Malley, a man who ranks up there with Hitler as icons of the 20th century in the borough of Brooklyn, moved them to Los Angeles and broke a neighborhood, a neighborhood's heart. Playwright and performer Heather Woodbury made that same trip a few years ago, moving from the Lower East Side that gentrified out from under her to Echo Park in Los Angeles, and used it as the anchor for her latest work, Tale of Two Cities, an American joyride on multiple tracks. It is a five-hour epic that manages to connect the dots between baseball, housing, DJing, roller coasters, ghosts, Starbucks, and even the Kabbalah. Heather Woodbury joins me now to talk about A Tale of Two Cities, which is in performance this month at Performance Space 122 in Manhattan. Welcome to WNYC, Heather.
Oh, thank you very much.
Why that move from New York to L.A. 50 years ago that made you think of baseball as a subject for your bicoastal play today?
Well, you know, it seemed to me to be sort of a harbinger of things to come, sort of something that was so specific and so particular to a place and neighborhoods and, you know, a collective identity, which was so Brooklyn. And for that to sort of become transmuted into a brand name and to just be uprooted and taken across the country and made into a different kind of Dodgers seemed to me sort of like the beginning of sort of a global identity as opposed to local identity.
So you're going to do a little excerpt from it, which we appreciate. Before you do that, just introduce us to some of the characters in the play and how they connect between L.A. and Brooklyn and between the 1940s and 50s and today.
Okay, well, to give you like a little tiny piece of Los Angeles history, when the Brooklyn Dodgers moved to Los Angeles, they uprooted three neighborhoods in California, in Chavez Ravine, Los Angeles. Three mostly Mexican-American barrios were displaced in order to build Dodgers Stadium there. And actually, strangely enough, most of those people had already slowly left their neighborhood and had to sort of sell out or leave because liberals had decided to build a public housing project there, which got wiped out by the right wing. So anyway, it's sort of a very convoluted public housing baseball story on both coasts. And
it's so interesting that you make that particular connection, not only because we're talking about Stuytown today,
yeah,
and you got, you know, kind of priced out of the Lower East Side, but because New Yorkers never talk about the L.A. side of that story. And it was so contentious there and
right,
really over things that were, you know, forgive me, baseball fans, you know I'm one too, but of much greater significance to people's lives in L.A. than what was at stake here, whether we have a baseball team, a third baseball team.
Well, but I mean, it's really fascinating to me how both of them are connected because where, you know, they were going to build a public housing project at the site where they now actually have Dodger Stadium in L.A.
Yeah.
And where they had Ebbets Field, right. there's now a public housing project
right.
and a fairly, you know, grim public housing project. So it's sort of fascinating. Anyway, I have a main character, a young DJ who's discovered his grandmother dead on the kitchen floor. And rather than bury her, he mixes this huge mix left made up of all the Left Behind records in their apartment. She's a ghost who flies around Los Angeles, a woman who grew up and was actually one of the last holdouts who was evicted from Chavez Ravine in Los Angeles. And she sort of flies around revisiting her past. And a very significant part of her past is this Jewish leftist from Brooklyn who lived in Los Angeles in the 40s and 50s and befriended her and was sort of a mentor to her, an older woman, a teacher. And this woman, Miriam, ends up at the beginning of the story sort of attacked mysteriously at Ebbets Housing Project and in a coma. And her young niece, Hannah, stands vigil over her body and reads her old letters. So we sort of travel back to the 40s and 50s through Hannah's reading of these letters and diaries of Miriam's. And Miriam is sort of the link between Los Angeles and New York and the past and the present. Then we have the little girl who lives in the Ebbets Field Housing Project who's accused of being Miriam's attacker. And so we have all these
characters.
Yes.
Heather Woodbury, my guest on WNYC, actress, playwright, her new work, Tale of Two Cities, an American joyride on multiple tracks, a five-hour epic that connects the dots between baseball, public housing, DJing, roller coasters, all these other things I've been hearing, and New York and L.A. So what are you going to read for us?
I'm going to read you a little bit of a contemporary New York character and her odd encounter at Starbucks. This is Hannah, Miriam's niece, who is dealing with her aunt being in this coma resulting from an attack at Ebbets Housing. To klugdude@globix.com from hahahana@cerces.net. Subject, Rabbi at Starbucks. Dear Josh, you're not going to believe what just happened. I see it as divine intercession, but I'm sure you'll dismiss it as coincidence. Last night, after I wrote you about Aunt Mir's attack, I fell into a cold sleep and slept for only a few hours. Then I crawled out of bed and walked to Starbucks on 7th Ave. You know how I said I was going to go and find a rabbi right after my triple grande latte? Well, Josh, that email got sent to the ear of some unnamable divine presence. Because I'm sitting there in Starbucks with my coffee, trying to remember where that Reform synagogue on Prospect Park is, actually, when out of the corner of my eye, I see this man in a beard and a hat, rocking just a little. I turn, and it's a rabbi, and he's doing a little prayer over his coffee and zucchini muffin. He looks up at me, and I don't even have to introduce myself. I just go over there, and all he says is, "You are Jewish. I'm Rabbi Dave Dovkind. Sit down. What is that? A triple grande latte?" And I say, "Yeah, you guess it." And he goes, "You keep kosher?" I go, "Not really. Is it kosher here at Starbucks?" And he goes, "Yes, Starbucks is kosher. They do it very well here. This is all kosher." I knew this wasn't true, but somehow it was bizarrely reassuring. Like, Josh, remember when we were kids and we'd visit Aunt Miriam in Brownsville and we used to tell her, "Dad says that Brooklyn is going to hell and we should all move to Long Island." And Auntie Mir would go, "No, no, everything is fine. Brooklyn is having a cultural renaissance. It's never been better." Just when you know it isn't true, but you have this very certain person telling you, it's fine, everything here has changed, all the standards you use to measure are shifted underneath you, but it's still the same, it's still good, it's kosher. Starbucks is kosher and you're a good girl, you always have been, sit down. It turned out Dave Dovkind was a pot-smoking Orthodox Hasidim. You would have liked him, Josh, you would have. He would have been like, "So, you're an atheist. That's fine. What kind of coffee is that? A mocha frappe?" I swear, he was awesome. So I spilled my guts about Aunt Mir being torn to shreds by bastard children at Ebbets Housing Projects, and he just started reminiscing about going to ball games at Ebbets Field when he was a kid. He had this blissful smile on his face telling me about the Subway Series back in 50-something. Everybody in the whole five boroughs was either at the game or listening or waiting for it to be over so that they could go back to their business because everything was frozen. I said, "It sounded like when we have blizzards and no taxis can get anywhere and no one can get anything done in New York." And he said, "Yes, it was very much like that. Everything just stops and we just listen to the pulse."
Heather Woodbury, reading from her Tale of Two Cities, an American joyride on multiple tracks in performance at PS 122 now. So we get the sense of all those overlapping things. That was a good excerpt to pick. The 9/11 attacks are a big part of the second half of the play, but
that
hadn't been your original plan, right?
That's right. I decided, since this was a tale of two cities, that I should develop it in both cities. So I developed my work in front of audiences, sort of making it up as I go along, and then I cut it drastically. So the original was like 12 hours long. So I did half of these installments in Los Angeles. Then I went to New York, and after I had done my first installment in New York, September 11th happened. And so I felt that I had all these contemporary New York characters, and of course I had to acknowledge what had happened for a New York audience. It didn't make any sense to do anything other than that. And it also just sort of went along with you know, what the piece was about, which was about irreversible loss, and also strangely what comes up in the piece for me is the sense of community that New York had after 9/11, and how in a sense there was this revival of a New York that we all love, this this New York that's not just about, you know, sort of Manhattan and its, you know, metrosexual charms, but, you know, about this sort of beautiful outer borough New York.
Were you living in L.A. then?
Yes, yes. But I was in New York developing my piece.
Right.
I was doing a residency.
I'm just curious how different you felt L.A.'s reaction to 9/11 was. Obviously, it didn't happen there.
Right.
But you say, why?
Well, I mean, because it was very shocking for me being in New York and then, you know, going back for a week visit to see my husband in Los Angeles and going to parties where people just acted like nothing had happened. I'm not to say there weren't lots of people in Los Angeles who were, you know, horrified and you know, obviously acknowledged it in all sorts of ways. But within about a week and a half, I just remember going to this very Hollywood party and just being kind of shocked at how...
That everything was normal.
Yeah, that everything was normal. It wasn't even a subject.
Which is what President Bush wanted us to do, right?
That's right.
Go shopping.
Back to normal, go shopping.
Can you talk a little bit about your process? Because I know you've done one-woman shows before. In fact, you're the first recipient of the Spalding Gray Award. I guess that would mean you worked in monologue. And is this the first thing that you've done for ensemble?
Yes, it's certainly the first thing I've done in my form, which I call the performance novel. You know, in other words, a lengthy work with the scope of a novel, but which is all drama, which is all people talking to each other, essentially.
In fact, you thought of writing a book at first, but decided to do a play. Is that
That's
correct?
Right. Yes, I sort of tricked myself into doing another play. I was trying to write a novel, but like many people who try to write a novel, I got mixed up in the middle and I thought, oh, I'll just perform this in front of people, and it turned into a play.
So the Great American Performance Novel.
Yeah, that's right. I'm really excited right now to be working with an ensemble of seven actors, partly because it's an expansion of what I do. I mean, I play many, many characters. I guess my previous piece, I played 100 characters. I think there are 79 characters in this piece altogether. And I developed it solo for the most part. But it's just wonderful for me to be working with six other actors and have each of them manifest that as actors. Each of them play, you know, probably up to about a dozen characters.
And one of the interesting things to me about your work in this piece is that you didn't just work with the actors. You really worked with the communities that you were representing from New York and L.A. And I understand that you held community recollection or recollection events in both places to put these together. What were they, and are you still doing them?
We still plan on doing one more that's sort of a tribute to the late, great Jane Jacobs. It's called The Death and Life of Great New York Neighborhoods. And we're not quite sure when we're going to do it, whether we're going to do it right after the show or whether we're going to wait. But what they were basically trying to relate this play, which is related, to what's going on to people, you know, all over the place, really, all over the Western civilization, essentially. You know, people are sort of losing their neighborhoods. Their neighborhoods are not only kind of evaporating or vanishing, but the people that remember the neighborhoods are kind of being dispersed. So there's this sense not only that your neighborhood is gone, but that it never existed. And so, yeah, I've been getting people to come in different neighborhoods and talk about their specific issues and bring photographs that, you know, remind them of that. And It's been really great. And we have a whole exhibit in the lobby of the theater, by the way.
Huh, at PS 122. Mm-hmm. And you know there's a new stadium story going on in Brownstone, Brooklyn right now, only this time you could say it's more of an L.A. story. A developer wants to build a basketball arena with high-rises that some fear will threaten Brownstone, Brooklyn again. Was that in your mind at all when working on this?
No, you know, it's just so funny how so many of these things just came up, you know, after I started writing, you know.
9/11, this.
Yeah, 9/11, and the return of baseball to Brooklyn in the
Coney Island
form
team.
Of Brooklyn Cyclones. It was strangely enough, Coney Island was already a big part of my story anyway. And you know, Coney Island is another place that's, you know, is the renovation or the quote revitalization going to retain the decrepit glory that Coney Island is, or is Coney Island going to just sort of turn into, you know, a mall with a light Coney Island theme? You know, who knows?
And you do have various radio connections here. I can't help but noticing one of the characters is a DJ, as you were saying, who puts together a mix for your mother. But beyond that, you include a call-in radio show as a part of the play. But I gather a fictitious one on WBAI where the host eats a pastrami sandwich while talking to her callers.
Jan Weissman, yeah. We're taking calls about the Ebbets Project case. That's right. She's my loving satire of Pacifica, essentially. And yeah, and there are all sorts of people that call in to talk to her about the Ebbets Project case. But of course, they don't want to talk about the Ebbets Project case. They want to talk about whatever axe they have to grind.
Heather Woodbury, we will have to leave it there. Tale of Two Cities, an American joyride on multiple tracks, parts 1 and 2, in performance at Performance Space 122 through October 29th. More information is available on our show page at wnyc.org. Is it a five-hour performance?
It's in two parts, and it's a little bit less than that. We've shaved some time off.
Thanks a lot for coming in.
Thanks.
Or hard and all thumbs, they're my Los Angeles, your Los Angeles, our Los Angeles. Do you think we'll really win the pennant?
Thanks for listening to The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org, and thanks.